Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this lecture organised by the Asia Research Centre in the school. And the title you can see, so I won't read that out, but we're delighted to have the Ambassador, Dr. Cho, here. He has been in London only since last year, but has already been a good friend to the school. He gave a rather splendid dinner for us after the first Gillam lecture, which was about famine in North Korea, and has also helped set up a link between the LSE and the Korea Foundation, which is promoting academic exchanges between the LSE and Korean universities. He and I also have something in common in that we are both graduates of Stanford, where I think we may have overlapped, although you were in the economics department and I was just in the business school. But after Stanford, Dr. Cho went to the World Bank, where he worked as an economist, and then the IMF, and then back to the World Bank, and then to a series of very important posts in Korea, ending in 2003-05 as the chief economic advisor to the president. So we couldn't have anybody better qualified to talk about the Korean economy today, reform, innovation, and internationalization. And we're very pleased that he's with us. He will talk to us first with some slides and then take questions. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sir Howard, for kind introduction. I'm delighted to be here with you this evening, and am very honored to have this opportunity to address this gathering in such a prestigious and world-renowned university. London School of Economics is very well known to Korean people, and especially to Korean students. It's one of the most popular universities that Korean students want to come and study. The LSE, as an economist, is a particularly special institution to me because I have learned so much from the excellent and groundbreaking articles and books published by the faculty of this university. I'm truly honored and pleased to be here this evening. The UK is very well known to Korean people. And it's London is one of the most popular destinations of Korean businessmen and tourists and even students. And I'm sure that out on the campus, on the streets, you will see everyday Korean tourists or Korean people rambling around the show windows and taking pictures. But when I was posted here about a year ago, I was a bit disappointed that my country is relatively a unknown quantity to many people in Britain. So I see it a part of my role as a Korean ambassador to the UK to try and improve the level of mutual understanding and interest. And this year, my embassy is running a series of cultural, business, and academic-related events under the banner of Think Korea 2006. The two governments, my government and the UK government, have agreed that we'll designate this year as the year of Think Korea. And the next, my embassy will take the initiative of promoting many events to have British people better known about my country. And the next year, in Korea, we'll have the year of Think UK, and next year the British Embassy in Korea will prepare a series of events. As such, I do value coming here and having this opportunity to introduce and explain the recent Korean economic development experience to you. And I hope my presentation today will aid your understanding of my country and hope even enthuse you to learn more and even make your visit. My presentation today will be divided largely into three parts. First, I will discuss very briefly about the post-war economic development experience of Korea. And having done that, then I will concentrate more about the particularly the reform and restructuring and internationalization of the Korean economy after 1997 crisis. And then finally, I will go briefly through the challenges that the current Korean economy is faced with. So the first part, Korean economic development experience. I have a very soft voice, so I think it should be tuned up. So first part, the development experience during the last half century. Korea is a country which has a long history of civilization, like China. Our history goes back to more than 4,000 years. And we have developed a rich cultural heritage and scholarly tradition throughout this history. But our country remained for too long as a closed economy. And Korean people resisted, and Korea resisted to the opening to the West until the very late 19th century. Substantially later than Japan and China. As a result, Korea could not benefit from the Western technological development and the civilization until the very end of the 19th century. So it remained basically as an agrarian economy, it remained as an economically and militarily very weak country. And then, in early 20th centuries, it fell to the victim of Japanese imperial invasions. And it was occupied and ruled by Japanese for 40 years. And after the Second World War, Korea was liberated from Japanese colonial rule, but the country was divided into north and south. Northern part was occupied by Russia, and southern part was occupied by the United States. And then we had our own government established in 1948, but soon it went through the Korean War, in which many young British soldiers, along with the Korean forces and the UN forces, shed priceless blood to keep South Korea from the invasion of the communists. And Korean economy was almost completely devastated through the war, which lasted for 3 years. And until the end of 1950s, Korea remained one of the poorest economy in the world. Now at that time, Korea's per capita income was lower than that of some African countries, including Kenya and Ghana, and our per capita income was much lower than our Asian neighboring countries, including the Philippines, Malaysia, and Thailand. It was in early 1960s that the Korean economy took off. We adopted what many people call the outward-looking development strategies, in contrast with the inward development strategies, which were adopted by India, many South Asian economies, and many Latin American economies. In early 1960s, we had introduced a comprehensive economic reforms in such a way to realign the economic incentive structures in such a way to encourage Korean people and Korean entrepreneurs to explore the overseas market and the new industrial investment opportunities. With quite abundant and well-educated labor and human resource, and also taking advantage of the international environment. During the post-war period, there was a series of tariff reductions and the free trade movement under the leadership of GATT and the WTO. So Korea could take full advantage of the free trading system of the post-war, and Korea could develop very rapidly. Actually, Korea, starting 1960s, had recorded the highest growth rates in the world for several decades following the, early 1990s. After the 1960s. Actually, in 1950s, many international economists predicted that India will be the highest growing economy among developing world in the following decades, because at that time, India had already well-established a bureaucratic system, which was well-trained and established under the British rule. And also, they have already started a five-year economic development plan under the banner of a social democratic system. And India also had a quite abundant and well-trained human capital. So, many international economists at that time predicted that in the following decades, India will be the highest flyer in the among developing countries in terms of economic performance. But actually, what it turned out was that the Asian, what they call is four Asian dragons, which includes South Korea, Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Singapore, which became the best performance. And all these four Asian dragons had adopted the outward-looking development strategies and emphasizing the integration of their economy with the rest of the world. So Korea continued a very rapid growth until 1990s. And in 1996, it became the member of OECD, the Club of Advanced Economies. And according to a very recent IMF report, Korea now has become the 10th largest economy in the world. That means the G7 country. Do you know who are the G7 countries? When I ask this question to my students, back in my home, not all of them know who are the G7 countries. The G7 is, of course, United States, UK, Germany, Japan, Canada, Italy. I miss the France, right?
easy to forget.
So only G7 countries, and China and Spain now is the large economies than Korea. We are almost in the same size economy as Indian economy and Brazilian and the Mexican economy. But we are slightly larger than them. But we are somewhat larger than Russian economy and Australian economy now. And also Korea has established a very competitive industrial base, as I may have a chance to introduce you later. Now we are strong not only in traditional industries such as shipbuilding. We are number one in shipbuilding, number six car makers, and number five steel producers, and also number four petrochemicals. We are also strong in new industries. We are number two mobile phone supplier, and we are number one flat TV producers, and we are also number one DRAM supplier. So Korea now has established a quite competitive and strong industrial base, and also Korean industrial base is well balanced between traditional industries and the new industries, which suggests that we still have a great potential for continuing reasonably high economic growth. But Korean, I mean, in the course of such rapid economic development, we also faced big and small crises. And the biggest crisis we faced was the 1997 financial crisis. Many Koreans call 1997 crisis the biggest national crisis after the Korean War. And to Koreans, 1997 crisis is known as the IMF crisis. They call it the IMF crisis. I don't think it is fair to the IMF because excuse me, because IMF did not create the crisis, but they just called it IMF crisis because IMF came immediately after the crisis and handled and helped to handle Korean economic problems. Anyway, we had a big crisis in 1997, and at this point, I think I have to tell you about the Korean economic development strategy or policy paradigm that we had maintained by that time. Actually, the development path or the development experience of Korea was substantially different from that of the United Kingdom or perhaps the United States. And perhaps if in the perspective of the international development experience, I guess the experience of the UK and to some extent the United States are exceptional. When you have actually UK initiated the Industrial Revolution, and when you have the front technologies, and when you are the front runner in technological development or industrial technologies, usually the firms can have a high markup price, and you can, to some extent, enjoy monopoly or oligopoly profit, and high profit. And in those countries, I mean, who are the front runner of the technologies, the reinvestment and the expansion of firms and industries are usually taking place through the reinvestment of the profit, retained profit. And also with this huge profit, you can finance the R&Ds and you can continue the competitiveness. And this, for instance, is enjoyed by Microsoft or Sony or Samsung these days. So this economic growth and industrial expansion is usually taking place through the market process. But in those countries, the late developers, which could not enjoy such front technologies, what they have to do is they have to rely on already the second level of technology or already the common technologies. But in order to compete in the international market, or in order to penetrate the foreign market, what they have to rely on is to explore the economies of scale and mass productions. In that way, they can undercut the price of the commodity, the goods, which has been already developed. And this is actually not my theory, but the theory that was suggested by a Harvard economic historian, I think the name of whom you are familiar is Goshenko. And he, according to him, if we study the experience of industrialization of the what he called is the backward economies, at that time it was Russia, Japan, and also Germany, one common thing was they had to explore the economies of scale. But in order to explore the economies of scale, you need a huge capital investment. But in a country where these domestic savings, domestic capital accumulation was poor and the savings rate is low, what they have to do is the state comes in and try to mobilize the capital that is needed to explore the economies of scale through the forced savings or guaranteeing of the foreign loans. So in those countries, which were the second tier, or the latecomers, usually the role of state are much significant and stronger than the front runners. And that's the experience of not only some of European countries, but many Asian countries, including Korea. Perhaps there is some similarities of the strategies, what the China is taking these days. So in the process of industrialization and development, Korean government have had some people expressed that intervened, and some people expressed it involved in mobilizing the resources, especially the fiscal capitals, through controlling and intervening in the financial sector. I can't go through all this in detail, but somehow they built up the relationship, what they call is a triangle relationship between the government, industry, and the banking system, which mutually shared the risk involved in the industrial investment. And the government controlled the financial system and allowed funds are secured by industrialists through this banking system. Sometimes this required some inflation financing and some forced savings scheme. This actually, I think there is serious debate on whether their policy was good, desirable, or effective in a country in such a stage of development. But in my view, which I guess is shared by many my colleague economists, that worked effectively for some period in Korea. But I guess Korea maintained such a development paradigm for too long, until say 1980s and 1990s. By that time, Korean economy has already well industrialized, and the firms have been already grown and globalized, and the economic system had become much more sophisticated. In other words, the Korean economy by, say, late 1980s or mid-1980s or 1990s had outgrown the institutions and systems and policy paradigm that Korea had. And I guess that was the fundamental reasons why Korea had to face such a big crisis. Of course, there is a contamination of a crisis from the neighboring countries, say from Thailand, Hong Kong, Taiwan. And also the herd behavior of foreign investors and lenders. But the financial market is inherently unstable and vulnerable to period shocks. And it is the role of government to prevent from such a crisis by timely implement policy reforms or using preemptive policy measures, as Sir Howard did when he was the head of financial supervisory service here, and he's admired by the splendid job he did. But in 1990s, Korean government failed to do so, and we failed to implement timely policy reforms and the policy response to the rapidly changing global economic environment. And that's, I guess, one of the key reasons that why we had to face such a crisis. But after the crisis, Korea had implemented a fundamental and comprehensive and quite drastic reform and restructuring. And as a result, now Korea has fully recovered from the crisis. And although we had to pay a lot of cost, and the process of reform and restructuring was quite painful, I guess the Korean economy is fully rewarded and now has emerged from the crisis much stronger and sound economy. And let me go through some more details about the actual measures and reforms and restructurings that we have done after the crisis. And as I said, the key to this successful economic restructuring, adjustment after the crisis was a comprehensive financial and corporate restructuring. And the essence of this restructuring was introducing and implementing the global standards in financial market, corporate governance, accounting rules, in almost every economic policy area. And we adopted the global standard in loan classification, capital requirement, governance structure. This is a bit technical. I don't think I need to go through all these, but in the process, when we implemented the global standard of banking supervision and regulations, many incumbent banks could not survive under such a rule. So as a result, about 40% of financial institutions, including banks, were either closed or merged to other banks. And we had to put about 30 public funds equivalent to about 30% of our GDP. And also, our capital market was completely opened after the crisis. And as a result, many domestic banks and non-bank financial institutions were purchased and taken over by foreigners. And also, which I will explain later, was that our barriers to hostile M&A was greatly reduced. And perhaps now Korea has the lowest barrier to M&As, hostile M&As. And as a result, now in Korean stock market, the foreign share is about 40%. And all the major Korean companies, of which name you may be familiar, like Samsung Electronics, POSCO, Hyundai, and major Korean banks, the foreign ownership is nearly 60 or 70%. This is extremely high figures. London is known for the most internationalized capital market. Here in the London Stock Exchange, I think the foreign ownership is about 30%. In the United States, in New York Stock Exchange, it's about 10%. And also in Tokyo Stock Exchange, I think it's about 20%. While this number does not necessarily mean the openness of the economy, but it can be an indicator. And now Korean stock markets, there's heavy foreign representations in Korean, the ownership of the major Korean companies. Also, there was Korean corporate governance reform. We have introduced what we call is the Anglo-American standard of corporate board, where the majority is occupied by outside directors. And there are not many Asian countries which have done it. I guess Korea is perhaps the first among Asian countries which adopted the Anglo-American corporate governance structures. And also in accounting standards, we implemented the international standard. And as a result, the internal and external monitoring has been strengthened in corporate management and corporate investment. And also through strengthening the competition, fair competition rules, we actually have, and through various measures that is shown here, including class actions and prohibiting the mutual guarantees, loan guarantees among chaebol affiliates, and also great rights of minority shareholders. And through all these internal and external pressures, actually, we have succeeded to change the corporate management attitude and the management priorities toward more profitability and cash flows. In the past, Korean companies tended to, the highest priority of management tended to be sales and asset maximization of market share. But through the crisis and through the changing of this market environment by introducing global standards, I think we have succeeded in changing their priority and their attitude of management toward profitability and more sound prudential management and cash flow, the emphasis on the cash flow. Now, this table shows about the number of financial institutions before crisis and after crisis. As I said, about 40% of financial institutions were either merged or closed. And also now the number of banks has been reduced from 33 to 19. And as a result, the bank's non-performing loans has been substantially reduced. And the bank's capital adequacy ratio also has substantially improved. And in the corporate sector, with this restructuring effort, now among the largest 30 chaebols in Korea in 1997, 16 of them now have gone under, and they were either closed or taken over by other companies, or many of them were taken over by foreign investors. And here in the bottom says that affiliates of 30 chaebols, the number has been reduced from 820 to 580 now. And in this process, M&A played an important role. And for instance, 1997, there are only 19 cases of M&A by foreigners. But in 1999, there are 114 cases of M&A by foreign investors. And also financial structure improved, as I just mentioned. Here, 1997, as I said, under the old economic paradigm, Korean companies heavily relied on bank loans. As a result, they had very high leverage ratios, the highest ratio, I guess, at the time among major countries. But within 5 or 6 years, it has been reduced to the lowest among the industrial nations. Now, the average debt-to-equity ratio of manufacturing firms in Korea is substantially lower compared to that of the United States or Japan. And also, as you see here, with the emphasis on cash flow and the profitability, the interest rate, coverage ratio has been also very significantly improved. Now, as a result of all this reform and the restructuring efforts, now, as I said, Korean economy has fully recovered from 1997 crisis, and our GDP growth recorded -7% in 1998, but since then, we have come back to our growth potential, which is about 4-5%, and this year, in 2006, we project that the growth rate will be about 5.3%. And the unemployment rate has gone down, and our export performance during the last several years has been very good. And also with a substantial current account surplus, now Korea has, and also by succeeding in attracting a substantial flow of foreign investment. Now we came up with a substantial foreign exchange reserve, which is more than 210 billion now, and that's the fourth largest foreign exchange reserve held by countries outside the United States. Now China has become the largest foreign exchange holders, and then Japan, and then Taiwan and Korea. And we believe that, as I said, now we have fully recovered from the crisis, and even the sovereign rate has been back to the pre-crisis levels with this sound and stable macroeconomic environment. And this shows the performance of the Korean stock market, which again has been very bullish during the last several years. And also, although there was very painful and costly adjustment, now Korean companies and industries has emerged much stronger and competitive. As I said, we are strong not only in traditional industries, but also in new industries, such as cell phones and display and DRAMs. And as I said, we not only have a well-balanced industrial structures, but we have a great potential to sustain this rapid advancement of our economy, which is indicated by the level of IT infrastructures here, that according to last year's IMD World Competitiveness Yearbook, Korea is, in terms of technological infrastructure, Korea is only second to the United States. And in terms of broadband penetration, Korea is number one. And also in terms of broadband cost, Korea is only second to Japan. So in this rapidly globalizing economy, actually the information and information technologies and to upgrade the economy as a knowledge-based economy is very important. And we have made a substantial investment in this area, and we are now in a good position to keep up with the competitiveness in this globalizing economy. Now, let me move to the last part of my presentation. In the past, so far I have explained our development experience. I guess our development experience has been quite successful, but it also from time to time has been turbulent. But overall, we have maintained a quite good growth path, which I believe will continue for a while. But at the same time, currently we are facing many challenges. One of the challenges may be the governance and policy decision making. I guess this is a somewhat abstract. But what I'm trying to say here is that let me briefly also mention the political development of Korea before I come to this point. There is, we had a very successful economic development during the last half centuries. Korea was under quite authoritarian regime until late 1980s. Our political democratization started in 1987 or 1988. But it was also remarkably very fast. During the last 20 years, I guess our political democratization and the political development has been as remarkable as our economic development. Now Korea has become, in my view, one of the most liberal democratic countries in terms of the freedom of media and press, and also the political transparencies, political system, and the decentralization of the political power, and also in terms of the people's participation in terms of the in the process of public policy making. If we define democracy as the system where the public policy decision is made through the broadest participation of the people, then I may call the Korea perhaps even the, one of the most advanced politically democratic countries because of its high penetration of broadband, internet system. These days, almost every government have their own homepage which solicits the views and people can participate in the public policy debate through expressing their views in this homepage of the government or many NGOs. So I guess Korea now is one of the most liberal democratic countries. But this rapid political development toward political democratization has not been always helpful in making timely policy reforms and policy decisions. I guess this is the case to all, to most and almost every democratic countries. Recently, we have seen that labor reforms were frustrated in France, and but especially in countries like Korea, which have achieved what we may call is a condensed growth, economic growth, and condensed political development. We have reached the stage of almost full political democracies, but in the process, we have not yet developed the institutions, practices, social practices, or people's mindset, which is needed to allow this democratic system to function effectively. I don't know how we can call them, but we may term it broadly, the social capitals, which allows the productive debates, compromise of the ideas, and resolving the conflict among different classes of people and people with different views. Korea yet has not well established such a system. So now, under this very rapidly changing global economies, we see that delivering of the timely policy measures and policy reforms are sometimes delayed. And that is what we are seeing. And this is, again, the problem which has come to a politically democratized country and has a very rapid economic progress. Yet, the institutions and the systems or social capital that allows them function effectively are lax. And Korea also is suffering from that. So Korean people are beginning to think about what is the best governance structure, the government, what is not corporate governance, the national governance structures. What is the best political systems for us to allow to keep up such a rapidly changing globalizing world? And we are beginning we are carefully studying the experience of many advanced countries, including the UK, to see what we can learn from their experience. And second is, again, the China's rise. And now I see that here in the Europe and in Britain, there are so many conferences and seminars discussing about the rise of China and its impact over the rest of the world. Korea is just the neighbor of China, and we are also facing the same problem. Actually, to Koreans, China is not only a threat, but also big opportunities. It's always beneficial to have a rapidly growing economy as your neighbors. And actually, so far, China's rapid growth has done many benefit to Korean economy. And our two economy has integrated very fast during the last 10 years. Actually, we normalized the diplomatic relation, I guess, with China only about, it was 1992, I don't remember, about 14 years ago. But during the last 10 years, China has become the largest trading partner of Korea. Now, I mean, in the past, it was United States and Japan, but now China has become the largest trading partner of Korea. And also, Korea has become the largest investor in China. Now, among the foreign the countries which make foreign investment, in year 2004, Korea was the largest investor. And last year, actually, Japan became larger investor than Korea. So we are the number two investor in China. So the two economies has been very rapidly integrated. And so far, rapidly growing market of China has become a very beneficial factor to Korean economic performance. And I'm not going through much detail in that, but I'll be happy to answer questions if you have. And then here I wrote the education and the human resources. Now, we think one of the major reasons why Korea's technologies and income level is substantially higher than China. I guess our per capita income is about 10 times of China. And the reason, one of the reasons why we became much more advanced than China is because we opened our economy and we integrated our economy about two decades earlier than China did. And actually, we could industrialize and develop fast in 1960s and 1970s because China was sleeping at that time under the closed economic regime. But now they are waking up and they are catching up very fast. And how should we respond to these challenges? I believe that the Korean strategy today is by further opening and globalizing our economies and making a heavy investment in R&Ds to maintain the gaps of globalization and economic system and the technology levels. And in this globalizing world, where these goods and services are freely mobile, and even human capitals are mobile, but we believe that the level of economic well-being of a country is basically determined by the effectiveness and efficiency of the governance structure of the country, and also by the quality of human capital of the country. So we are trying to upgrade our quality of education and the human resource. Actually, we are in good shape in terms of what we may call is the quantity of education. Actually, among those high school graduates, Korea has the highest rate of college enrollment. About 82% of high school graduates in Korea go to the college. This is a substantially higher rate than the United States and Japan. It's the highest rate in the world. But what we still have to do is improve the quality of education, especially the quality of university education. So far, we have relied on importing the foreign education service by sending our students out to study. Like here you see many Korean students in this university and here in other universities in UK. Actually, I read last week that among the foreign students who are studying in the United States, the largest group is China, India, and then is Korea. But if you include those students who are studying in the high school and the primary school, which was sent from the home countries, Korea constituted the largest foreign students studying in the United States. So we are actually, Korean parents are so enthusiastic about sending their children abroad for good education and to the college for good education. This is good, so we have great potential, but yet I think we have to improve the quality of our domestic education. And I expect the many Korean students here, when they come back, will contribute to that improvement. And then social safety net and aging, well, as in many other neighboring countries, the traditional industry in Korea, including small medium firms, are facing a big threat from Chinese goods. So we have to go through a major restructuring of traditional small medium industries. And they are the major employer of the labor in Korea. So we have to deal with this labor market flexibilities and also the social safety net, which we need to build up further. And this requires a substantial fiscal expenditure and the tax and mobilization of resources, which is another challenge. And aging, again, is faced by many countries, but Korea particularly is facing the aging problem. So far, Korean economy demographic composition has been rather young, but I read in Times or Guardian that young British people now prefers work and fun to babies. And, it's same in Korea, and our birth rate has become the lowest in Korea, I mean, among the world. So soon, Korea will become a very rapidly aging economy. So these are the challenges. This is not the only challenges, but these are among the challenges we are facing. But I believe that Korea will, Korean people will deal with these problems reasonably well. The reason why I believe and I remain reasonably confident of the future of Korea is that if we see the record of past economic development of Korea, we can be reasonably sure that this perseverance and adaptability of the Korean people will successfully face these challenges. And before I conclude, let me introduce one of the jokes that I learned from my friend, who was the Minister of Information and Communication until very recently. And this is what he introduced to me. He says, let's find a small truth to make our life a perfect 100 points. And if we assign A, B, C, D to 1, 2, 3, 4, and then what makes life the perfect 100%? And is it luck? No. Money? No. Knowledge? Not enough. Hard work? Close, but not enough. Maybe fortune? Almost. But not enough. And what is it? What would make life perfect if not luck or fortune? Don't you think you had better change your attitude toward life? Attitude, yes. It is 100%. After he has shown this through his homepage, Korean netizens come up with some more words, and they test stress. This is take rest. This is interesting. But anyway, I think Koreans have kept a positive attitude, and this positive attitude will allow us to continue to succeed in this economic performance. And I would like to say that now Korea is a free market economy and also a fully liberal democratic country has become, is in a position to become a strong partner of the UK in dealing with and promote the peace, stability, and the prosperity of the global community. And let me stop here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ambassador. We have time for a few questions, and I see a hand at the back. Wait for a microphone to get to you, which it will do very shortly.
Your Excellency, thank you very much for an interesting talk. Obviously, Korea in 97 adopted the sort of neoliberal, the Washington Consensus, you know, formula in a major way. Now, there are signs of resistance at the moment, aren't there? I mean, there is the trouble that, say, Lone Star, the American sort of, you know, private equity bank is getting into, and your farmers, I mean, have been amongst the most visible sort of recent protesters in anti-globalization protests and things like that. Is there any danger, do you think, of any of these reforms being rolled backwards?
Yeah, sure, if you like, yeah.
Yes, you are right. That I also read the newspapers these days. That there is some movement among some peoples in Korea. But I guess this kind of, how should I put it, some resistance is faced inevitably in the path of globalization. And I mean, when the river is flowing, in some edges of the river, there is some reverse flows. But important thing is what is the direction of the forces in the Korean economy and the Korean society. And I see the strong forces and the fundamental forces is toward more globalization. And if you see the actual policy record we have done, despite of all this noise, we haven't done any backsliding policy response to that. We have maintained throughout, since 1997, toward more globalization and more internationalization of our economy. I'm not in a policy circle these days, so I cannot say with 100% confidence, but I personally believe that direction will continue.
There's another woman just, yeah, that's it.
Good evening, Ambassador Cho. My name is Eunice King, and I'm a history and government student here at the LSE. I just wanted to comment briefly on Korea's attitude to the Japanese government in light of the current events that happened in the territorial disputes. In my East Asian history class, the professor actually stated here at the LSE that Tokto Island was actually Japanese territory. And so what I did was I raised my hand and I said, oh, excuse me, currently there's Korean police patrolling that island, and you failed to even mention and to inform my fellow classmates here that it's a territorial dispute. So the students weren't even made aware of the issue that it was a territorial dispute. And then I went on and said, historically, it was always Korean territory up until 1905, when then it becomes an issue in international spheres and in the international community. So I just wanted to ask, what kind of diplomatic action is the Korean embassy planning in the UK about Tokto Island? And for Koreans not to only raise voices in the Asian region or on the internet, but also in media coverage here in the UK or in Europe and in universities here like the LSE. Thank you.
Yes. Our response to this Tokto Island, wherever Japanese raises issue and make noise, is that when you have a wife, you don't claim that she's your wife, because everybody knows that she's your wife and she's my wife. basically, I mean, what the Koreans' response to that. And it is, in fact, Korean territory, and it had been Korean territory throughout history. And actually, we believe that Japan occupied the island in the days when they were preparing and they were doing the war against Russia. There was when Japan already has invaded the Korean peninsula. So our view is that if Japan continue claim Tokto is their land, which they occupied in the period of their imperial expansion, we think that they are they are not ready to recognize their imperial invasion to Korea and even China. They just want to try to justify what they have done. And we are very regretful that they continue to do that. That's our government position.
Certainly, John Prescott is following your advice about not claiming that he's got a wife. but yeah, the second row here.
Hi. Thank you, first of all, for coming to LSE and delivering such a nice presentation. My question has to, actually, you talked a little bit about the industrialization during the 1960s period and during the 1990s. And my question is, do you think industrial policy is relevant in the age of liberalization and globalization, and specifically applying it to African countries or, for example, to other lesser developed countries? Should they pursue the same type of industrial policies that the Korea adopted? And that would basically be against Washington Consensus prescriptions. So your opinion on that?
Well, that's a very good question. I think I said that in Korea, we had industrial policies. So was Japan and many, as I said, late developed countries. And in my view, they were effective to some different degrees. Now, the question whether the developing countries, including those in Africa or South Asia, should they implement industrial policies? I think we should view this question in many different dimensions. One difference between the Korean experience, industrial policies, and the global environment when Korea pursued such industrial policies are quite different now. Now, in, say, 1960s and the 70s, Korea could do some industrial policies by controlling banking system or some protecting the domestic market. But the current global economic environment is very different from 1960s and 1970s. Now, international capital market is almost completely integrated, and under the WTO systems, you can't effectively use the industrial policies. So I guess the development paths and the strategies of those countries which start the industrialization, I guess, should be different from those what we did in 1960s and 70s. I don't know how and what should be their best policies. I guess they have much less room. In terms of the role of state, there is much less room for the for the state or the government to play. I guess best strategy and this globalizing world, I guess what actually the national government can do best is, again, put the governance system in order and also investing in technology development and also human capital, I guess, is the best. This answer may be too simple question to your quite fundamental question.
Yeah. Woman in red.
Hello, Dr. Cho. I'm Korean. I'm Korean student at LSE, and I'm particularly interested in the case of neoliberalism, of which affected actually Korean economic enhancement recently after the post 1997 crisis, and particularly in the case of IT ubiquity in Korea right now. There's no question or no country which can actually catch up with the rapid growth of the IT ubiquity in Korea at the moment. But according to your argument, actually, it seems that you are actually in line with neoliberalism, neoliberal reforms right now. I mean, and the global, like, neoliberal effect and the positive effect of neoliberalism in the middle of a globalization process. But in my point of view, there must be a lot of variables which can be explanatory to this current economic enhancement, especially in particular in the IT IT industry. So you were the important figure in Korean bureaucracy. So, and then I know that you have a close friend in the Minister of Information and Communication. So according to your personal knowledge and relationship and experiences, do you think that actually neoliberalism was the most important variable to achieve this kind of ubiquity of IT process in the in this world system? Or was it the role of the state, which was actually, which had a continuity from the legacy of the Korean industry?
Yes, my knowledge on IT technologies and industry is very limited. But I guess this opening and globalization and also political democratization partly contributed to the growth and developing competitiveness of IT industry in Korea. But I guess there are more fundamental factors. There is Korea has been quite successful in building the infrastructures for the ITs, and in terms of the putting the cables for broadband system, and well, because I guess there are several reasons. One of the residential environment of Korea, for instance, about half Korean people are living what we call is apartment, it's a flat, in high, very high-rise flat. And connecting a cable to that apartment, which can reach, say, 100 families and households living in that apartment, the cost is much less than, say, doing that in the UK, for instance. In the UK, if you go to the countryside, there are houses in 1 mile, so it must be very costly to build such efficient infrastructure. So, but our residential environment was quite favorable to develop the infrastructure for the broadband system and wide participation of people to, you know, internet technology development. And also, we started later, and so we could, this is one of the advantages of late developers. And when we started it, we could start with all the new technology and the new infrastructure, which facilitated the growth of the industries, IT technologies too. But also, I guess this the liberal economic environment, which stimulates the creativity of the people. Now, you see that what we call is a Korean wave, in our country we call it Hallyu, is very popular among Asian countries, and even in some Latin American countries. I don't think it would have been possible under the authoritarian political regime or quite closed economic environment. By opening and by globalizing and by liberalizing, I think we have unleashed the people's creativities and stimulated that, which combined with this well-developed infrastructures to allow Korea taking advantage of the front runner in that area.
I think we'll take one more question because we normally wind up. As I say.
But given Germany's problems with reunification of the two parts of the country, if Korea is still as keen as before 1989 in reunification of the North and the South?
Well, I would say that it is not Korean policies or, that to, or how should I put it, that we do not want immediate reunification between North and South Korea. First, because we are not prepared. We can't afford the immediate reunification. We have seen the German experience. And in the case of Germany, the gap between West and East was rather small. In terms of population, I guess the West Germany had 4 times as large as East. And in terms of income level, West Germany was about 2 times better off. But if we compare North and South Korea, South Korea's population is about double of North Korea, but our income gap is, I don't know how much, perhaps 20 times or 15 times. So we think we are not prepared to deal with this reunification. So we want to help North Korea to open to the rest of the world and begin to improve their economic well-being and their industrial development. And when we are in a stage that substantially converged, I don't think it can be fully converged soon, but then I think we are in a better position to discuss and deal with reunification. But currently, our policy is we do not want reunification immediately.
I'm not quite sure, Atta, why you use the German analogy. I mean, after all, in this country, 400 years on, we're still suffering economically from the Act of Union with Scotland, and that is a sign of just how long it can take. Ambassador, thank you very much for coming this evening. It was a great presentation.
Thank you very much.